Hello and welcome to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew and this is Steppin' Out. And hey, if you or someone you love is having a hard time with alcohol, you can reach out to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous online 24 hours a day at www.aa.org. Additionally, if you want to connect with us here at the show, we would love to hear from you. You can visit our website at www.steppinoutradio.com. While you're there, do sign up for our free newsletter and send us an email. Let us know how we're doing. All right, next up we have Cynthia. Cynthia, how are you?
Hi there, Drew.
Good.
Hi, family. My name is Cynthia, and I am an alcoholic.
Cool. Tell us, Cynthia, a little bit about what it was like and what it's like now and what brings you here this evening.
Wow. What it was like, Drew, for me was that I was this child who just never liked who she was. And I was a child who just kind of hid out. And I often say to myself at 3, 4 years old, what could be so bad in my life that I just hated who I was, what I looked like, the way that I felt. And I think what it was for me was the family that I grew up in.
Okay.
I grew up in a family that everyone was addicted to alcohol. Mm. I have come from a family of five, and I like to call my father was the grand poobah of the family.
Right.
And there were five children, and I had one sister who never drank, and she never smoked cigarettes. She went to church, and I like to call her the black sheep of the family. And the other four of us were out there strung out on alcohol. And even as a child, I would never bring anybody home because I was so afraid of what I would find. Either the cops were going to be there, either there were going to be pots and pans flying, or maybe my parents were just rumbling on the floor.
Just constant drama.
Constant drama. So I always went to my friend's house. And when I went to their house, I would sit down with them at their table. And it was just so different.
Sure.
It was like a family, mm-hmm. which I never knew. And I just wanted what they had all the time. And I didn't know how to get that.
Mm-hmm.
So I constantly ran and I constantly seek that. And when I think about taking my first drink of alcohol, unwillingly, I must have been about 4 or 5 years old. And my father would send me to the refrigerator to get his can of Rheingold beer. And I could remember seeing this can of beer and the white can and the red lettering at 4 and 5. And I'd go get that can of beer and I'd pop the top. And I did what my father did when he took that first drink. He would take that first sip of beer and he'd just say, and here I am, 5 years old, and that's what I'm doing. Of course, it wasn't as bold as my father. I was five, so I was like a little kid. And I didn't know why I did that, but right. I did it because that's what he did. So when I willingly took my first drink, it was probably about 15 years old, and I was on a golf course with a couple of girls and some guys, and they were drinking Mad Dog 2020 and Thunderbird. And I'm thinking, wow. Anything named Mad Dog is going to give me a problem. I should have known. But I didn't know. All I knew was when they drank, they were acting differently.
Right.
They were laughing. And I'm thinking to myself, what's so funny? There's nothing funny. Because when you hate yourself so much on the inside and you're watching somebody on the outside having a great time, I just couldn't understand that. And I remember them saying to me, you know what, Cynthia, just try this. You'll like it. And, you know, Drew, it's either I'm loving it or I'm hating it. There's
sure.
no gray area for me. And I fell immediately in love with alcohol. And why did I fall in love with alcohol? Because it allowed me to escape. It allowed me to become this person that I always thought I wanted to be. And it was all the physical stuff. Like I always wanted the long hair and, you know, that hourglass shape. And I just wanted to be like one of those girls that were bamming all over the place. And mm-hmm. and when I drank alcohol, that's what it did for me.
So it completed you. It made everything as it should be.
As it should be.
Right.
As it should be. And I often, when I talk about her, sometimes I call her Sybil because I was just this totally different person.
Mm.
And that's what alcohol does. It just transforms you into somebody that you never dreamed that you wanted to be. I never dreamed that I wanted to stand on the street corner just to get the next one.
It's funny that you bring this up because, you know, we have Alcoholics Anonymous in here quite frequently, and that's such a universal truth I hear from just about every speaker mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. how alcohol fix them or fill the void that they had mm-hmm. going into this. And that, I think, is very much the difference between, say, a problem drinker or someone who drinks
yes.
heavily and the alcoholic. You know, it's extremely powerful, you know, to hear that week in and week out. And it's yeah. just amazing to hear it reinforced in your story. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that
yes.
with us.
Yes, it's like I like to call it this black hole on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what I put in there, it never filled it up.
Right.
And we say in Alcoholics Anonymous that there's nothing on the outside that's going to fix that hole on the inside. That is an inside. inside job.
Sure.
And I didn't know that for so long. So I continued to try to fill that hole with alcohol, with men, with whatever I could fill it with, just to feel at peace and whole, because I always felt like I was just different from everybody else.
Mm.
So I continued to run, and I continued to search for something to make me feel complete. And a lot of times we pick up things because we think that that's what's going to fix us. So I figured I'd get married because that would fix me. So I married somebody who was probably so much worse than I was, but I was probably worse than he was. And of course that didn't work. So I always set these like little milestones along my path. And I always said, if I ever got that bad, I'm going to stop. And you know what? I always got that bad.
Yeah.
And you know what, Drew? I never stopped.
Right.
It was always something else.
Sure.
And I always remember saying, well, if I ever got pregnant, there's no way that I could have a kid and drink. And you know what? I did every single day, because the reality is I thought that if I stopped drinking that I was going to die. That's
right.
The reality. I didn't know how not to drink. I didn't know how not to feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so alcohol just took me to a lot of places that I never imagined myself being.
So basically, Cynthia, no matter what would happen, you would just lower the standard.
Yes.
And the standard would just get lower. And lower.
Always. And you know, I look at the girls standing on the corner, and I'd always say to myself, if I ever did that, somebody better shoot me.
Right.
And you know what? I did that. I always did what I expected that I wouldn't do, but I always did it so much worse than what I could ever imagine. And
how old are you at this time?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I had my daughter when I was 21 years old, and I was just right in the midst of my addiction.
Would you say at that point you crossed the line by 21?
I think I crossed the line way before, but you don't realize
you don't
that you
it.
Crossed the line.
No, but looking in the rearview mirror now, where do you think that line might have crossed? Somewhere around that time, maybe earlier?
Probably earlier than that. I think when I was continually chasing the alcohol, looking for that quick fix, when I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And that was probably about, I don't know, 18 or 19 years old, because I was still, you know, I figured if I'd go to college out of town someplace,
sure,
that would fix me. We call that a geographical change.
But you got to take you with
you. I take me with me.
Yeah.
And I found all the, you know, the boys' school and all the bars that I left New York for.
Did you know that at the time you couldn't stop? Or did you? I mean, you know that now, but at that time, did you believe you could stop?
I always thought I could stop. And I would always, my mother would always say to me, you know what, Cynthia, you have a problem.
Hmm.
And that, you know what that sounds like to someone who has a drinking problem? It sounds like somebody running their fingernails down a chalkboard when they say that.
Right.
Because it just pierced me right in my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that I had a problem, but I didn't want anybody else to know that I had a problem. And the fact that I just couldn't show up ever.
Did you think that you had others fooled? Did you think that other people couldn't see that you had a problem?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's so funny because we always think, oh, I always thought that I'd dress myself up. And I look really good when I went out. But you know what, Drew? I never came back like that. You
yeah.
know, my hair was all messed up and my skirt was all somewhere else. I didn't even know. So, you know, it's just amazing what alcohol does and the lies that it has you believe.
Sure.
You know, it just has you just not understanding and not knowing and just not wanting to know.
Yeah.
And I just wanted the pain to stop. That's the reality.
So you took you with you off to college. What happened out there?
Oh, God. I was running amok. Oh, I went to a girls' school, and I'm thinking if I stayed away from the boys that I'd be okay. But I was there for like a week, and I found the whole boys' school. And, you know, it just never worked that way. And, you know, and now I was out of my mother's sight, and, you know, it just got worse and worse, Drew. It never gets better, and that's what we always think, that, you know, I can do this thing one more time. You know, I have one more drink in me. And a lot of times it's our last. You know, you just never know when it's going to be your last drink.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept on running, came back to New York.
Oh, where was your child at this time?
I'm sorry.
Where was the baby at this
time?
Well,
I didn't have her in college.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So
when I came, as soon as I got out of college, though, I had her.
Okay.
I had her at 21 years old.
You had her at 21.
And
yeah.
It's just amazing how being a mother and not being able to take care of myself, how I didn't realize the damage that I was doing to her. And I always thought if I kept her fed, even though it was McDonald's every night, that would be okay.
Right.
And, you know, one of the times that I think about is her standing outside of a bicycle shop.
Mm-hmm.
And her telling me, you know what, Mommy, I want that bike. And I promised her that bike. And you know what? Drew never got the bike.
Didn't happen.
Never. Couldn't even go inside the shop. And ouch. That's what alcohol does.
My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out. And hey, if you want to connect with us here at the show, we would love to hear from you. You can visit us online 24 hours a day at www.steppingoutradio.com. While you're there, do sign up for the newsletter, send us an email, let us know how we're doing. Also, if you or someone you love is having a hard time with drinking, AA.org is available. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You can visit their website, or you can just reach out in your local phone book under Alcoholics Anonymous. And in case you're just joining us, we were speaking with my friend Cynthia. Cynthia, you weren't the mom you wanted to be. We're talking about, you know, you painted this picture of you outside the bicycle shop with your daughter when we just left off, and it's just heartbreaking because you can't get there and you don't know why. I mean, that's tough. That is really tough. You know, what happens next? I mean,
So what happens is I just continue.
Yeah.
The bottom line is that I couldn't stop until the pain got great enough. And I always thought, well, what is it going to take me for me to stop? The fact that I was stealing from my parents, that I was using charge cards that weren't mine, that I was selling my body for $5, that I was doing all of these things, and it just wasn't enough. The pain wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And what it took for me was to lose everything that I had and to walk the street with my daughter not knowing where we were going to eat or where we were going to sleep.
How old were both of you at this time?
Oh, gosh. I must have been probably about 26, 7 years old, 27 years old. And she must have been about 5.
Oh,
and you know, I just it's heartbreaking when I think about it today. But back then I was very grateful because I had a mother who had unconditional love, and she always picked me up by my bootstraps and always rescued me. And I'm so grateful, as much as I hated her. And the only reason why I hated her was because she would always say, Cynthia, you have a problem. You have a problem. But she really saved me. I think, my husband left because I think I stole everything that was stealable from him. And, I wasn't employable anymore, and I just looked terrible. And I was so glad when the beer cans you could get 5 cents for. Mm. I can remember feeling so happy for that, because a lot of times that's how we ate dinner.
Yeah.
I would just gather up those beer cans, even if they weren't mine, and just take them just to get maybe a little macaroni and cheese, something.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, my bottom came via Nassau County Jail. And what had happened was I was living with my mom at this time, and she had taken me in, and I was so grateful for that. But the reality was that I was so excited because she had taken me in, and now I had a built-in babysitter.
Mm.
That's what I was thinking, because
right.
Now I can really drink the way that I want to drink. And I don't have to worry about leaving my daughter somewhere where I don't know where she is.
Sure.
And I would just continue to go out and I'd drink. And then my mom would ask me to write a check for her. And when you're scheming in your mind, you start getting these physical reactions when you know you're going to get over.
Right.
Like when I knew that I was going to get over on somebody inside, I'd feel all happy. Like I'd feel like a hero or a shiro. Mm. That's what I'll call myself. And I would write these checks. She'd ask me to write a check. And I remember my disease saying to me, just take one for yourself. And Drew, one is never enough,
no.
Ever.
No.
I could never have one of anything. I couldn't even have one man. I always had to have a spare on the side. Just in case one acted up, I had that guy, the spare. Anyway, I would write this one check for myself, and it would only be a matter of time before that was gone, because right. It would just go just like that. And it felt like 2 weeks before she'd ask me again. And I remember when she asked me, and my mind just said, just take the whole book. Like I said before, either I'm all the way on one side or I'm all the way on the other side. So I would write these checks, and I'd forge these checks like they were mine. And I think what really deep down inside, that I wanted to get caught. I wanted to be rescued.
Yeah, you
really.
Think at the time that was kind of what you were saying
yeah,
out there? Yeah,
I think so, because here I am. I'm just writing these checks and cashing them like they're mine.
Sure.
And so anyway, the day came, and what happens was you kind of lose your mind when you drink it, because I must have forgot that checks came back. I don't know what I was thinking. And that day that all of those checks came back, let me tell you, Drew, I could still hear the scream that my mother screamed that day.
Oh, I can
and
imagine.
I came running down the stairs, and she's crying over all of these checks. And I mean, Drew, the whole table was full of checks.
Oh, man.
And she's laying over these checks. And all I could say was, oh my God, Mom, who could have done such a thing? Oh. That's the only thing that would come out of my mouth. I mean, I was such a great liar. And I went to the forgery department with her and I filled out all the papers for her. And I even sat there and I talked to the cops and I said, it must have been my brother. It must have been my sister. It wasn't me. But, you know, your mother knows. You can't lie
sure.
to your mother. So I got arrested for forgery and I went to Nassau County Jail. And Drew, being in jail, I think, was a point in my life where I kind of realized that I had crossed this invisible line that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
It's almost like I had woken up and I had a 10-year-old daughter. And where does she come from? How right. did this happen? How did I get here? And I sat in jail and I remember crying, but I still just couldn't get this thing because in jail in Nassau County, they put on this green outfit. And I can remember thinking, green is not my color. I would rather be in that orange that those guys are wearing. You know, I look good in orange. I mean, but this is the sickness of this disease. And I'm just so grateful for being rescued because that's what I feel like. I was being rescued.
How did the rescue come about? What was the message? How did you receive the message of hope? I mean, Where did it come to? How did it get to you?
Well, the judge said you have a choice.
Ah.
Either you can go to Alcoholics Anonymous or you could stay in jail. So you
choice.
Pick one.
Yeah, okay.
So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the reality is that I was afraid to go to Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't know what they were going to do to me.
Right.
I didn't know what to expect. And my first experience in Alcoholics Anonymous was this group anniversary, was my home group at the time. And I went into this anniversary, and the disco ball's going, and people are laughing, and they're having a great time. And I'm looking for the booze because there's just no way that people can have a great time without drinking.
Explain to the audience what a group anniversary is.
Okay, a group anniversary is when you're in a home group, which is a suggestion of Alcoholics Anonymous that you get a home group where you go to the meeting, whatever meetings they have, so people can get to know you. So the group celebrates their existence. And my group was probably about 50-something years old at the time. So they were having a party in celebration of keeping the doors open for that many years. And people were there, and they're dancing, and you have a speaker, and I'm still searching for this booze. And we keep soda in the garbage cans, but I didn't know that at the
right.
time. So I would see people go into the garbage can, and in my mind, I'm thinking, yes, that's where the booze is.
Right.
And I'm trying to get to that garbage can without anybody seeing me. And a lot of newcomers wonder, how do we know that you're new? And we know because we've all been new at one point. And Alcoholics Anonymous told me to just keep coming back. And I'm so grateful that they told me to keep coming back because they're the first place that ever said to me to keep coming back. Everybody else was saying, get the heck out of here. We don't want you. You know, you're not worthy. We don't want you here. So I was so grateful that no matter what I did, because I was crazy when I came in because I didn't know how to act.
Yeah.
And I would come in and we talk about some suggestions in Alcoholics Anonymous about getting a sponsor. And anything they told me to do, I would do the opposite.
Cynthia, did you know you were home when you got there?
No.
No.
No. It was not home for me.
It was
a weird place where people wanted to shake my hand and be happy. There was nothing happy. No.
Okay.
So, no, it did not feel like home.
But a little better than jail.
Oh, I'll take that. Yes. So much better than jail. And the reality, Drew, is that I was so afraid of myself.
Yeah.
And I was so afraid that people were going to judge me. And I'm so glad that the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous begins with we. You know, it says we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And until I could grasp that first step, there was no way that I could recover. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and my life has changed unbelievably.
How long is it for you now?
It'll be 14 years in September.
Good for you.
And I'm just better than blessed. Better than blessed. Because you know what, Drew? I don't deserve to be here today. What I deserve is to be in jail or dead. That's what I deserve. But I'm so grateful that there's this power greater than myself.
How's your daughter? How's your relationship with your daughter?
Oh, she's 24 years old. She's in grad school to be a teacher. That's no doing of mine. It's the women in Alcoholics Anonymous who has taught me how to be a mother and how to be a woman, how to be a friend. So I didn't know how to do any of that. So I'm so grateful. So all I want to do is say to anybody out there who's struggling, struggling, that there is hope. You know, you don't have to do this alone. All you have to do is come in and just let us love you until you can love yourself.
That's fantastic. Cynthia, we're going to leave it there. And I want to thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thanks, Drew.
Okay, once again, you are listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.